Good evening and welcome to City Visions, now in its 20th year on KALW. I'm your host, Joseph Pache. This hour, our topic is public pensions. Who's going to pay? The 2008 financial and economic crash is reported to have wiped out about a quarter of the value of San Francisco City Workers' Pension Fund. That's roughly $3.5 billion. Solutions to replenish the losses are not easy to come by as the economic recovery continues to limp along. Although there were some signs of hope as Mayor Ed Lee reported about $30 million in unexpected tax revenue last week as he unveiled his new budget proposal. However, that bump pales in comparison to the projected unfunded pension and health care liability that the city faces. Amid questionable economic recovery and burgeoning retiree costs, attention has turned to restructuring public employee compensation to help close the gap. As you might imagine, pension reform is a hot topic among unions, legislators, public workers, and taxpayers, not to mention San Francisco mayoral candidates. After last November's failed Measure B, San Francisco voters are likely to see two competing ballot measures come this fall that will ask them to decide how much city employees should contribute towards their retirement. One measure born out of talks between union representatives and the mayor, and the other a second attempt at pension reform from public defender Jeff Adachi. And as you might imagine, the conversation is continuing and there's much more to talk about. And so we've brought together tonight many perspectives from this this debate to the studio. And joining me here are two guests, Larry Bradshaw. He's paramedic and a vice president of the Service Employees International Union, SEIU Local 1021, which represents 54,000 members in Northern California. Welcome, Larry.
Thank you, Jonathan.
It's Joseph.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And we're also joined here.
I got the J right.
You did. And we're also joined by Corey Cook, who's assistant professor at the University of San Francisco and the director of the Leo T. McCarthy Center for Public Service and the Common Good. Welcome back, Corey.
Thank you. Good evening.
And joining us on the phone, we have two guests tonight. First, we have Dave Lowe. He's the executive director and director of governmental relations of Californians for Retirement Security, the largest classified school employee union in the country. Welcome, Dave.
Thank you.
And at the bottom of the hour, we'll be joined by Jeff Adachi, San Francisco's public defender and proponent of the so-called Son of B measure, which is currently collecting signatures to qualify for the November ballot. And we invite you, our listeners, to join our conversation by dialing 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. And we'll open our phones in about 20 minutes. Or you can email us now at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. And before we start a conversation, in the spirit of full disclosure, I will disclose that I am an employee of the City and County of San Francisco. My appearance here tonight, as always, does not in any way represent the views of the City and County. So back to our conversation. Corey Cook from the University of San Francisco, give us the 101, the primer to how we got here.
Well, I think what you start off with is exactly right, which is you start with the financial collapse in 2008. Prior to that time, I think most folks regarded San Francisco's pension system as among the healthiest in the state. And since that time, I think you certainly have a decline of pension health in San Francisco, but also you have this burgeoning national movement looking at public employee health and retirement benefits. And that's, in state houses in Wisconsin and Virginia and other places, New Jersey, and it's going on in California. So you see this playing out in localities in California and at the state level. So it's certainly been caused by the financial collapse, but I think, it's really fueled right now by real serious fiscal concerns at the state and local level. How do localities balance their budgets? San Francisco's, the latest, I think, is upwards of a $300 million budget deficit. Start to look at what the components of that are, and frankly, the cost of pension and retiree health has been targeted by a lot of folks. Is this something that cities and counties can do to reduce their budget problems?
Hmm. So, would you say that even before the 2008 crash, there was already concerns about the city and county's ability, or other cities and counties' abilities to be able to fund their pension liabilities?
Yeah, I mean, there was something that was always on the horizon. I mean, I think, there's some LAO, Legislative Analyst Office, did some reports. I remember from the mid decade that talked about, you know, in the future as rising public employee salaries and these increases in pension benefits that have been enacted retroactively, that there was going to be this looming problem down the road. But I think it was sort of brought into being a lot sooner than people anticipated.
With baby boomers retiring, that kind of thing as
right,
well.
Right, exactly. There was sort of an imbalance in paying for the retiree benefits. But then suddenly as the collapse happened, I think it really brought into stark relief how serious the problem could be in a short period.
And do you have a handle on the numbers of what San Francisco is facing in terms of its deficit around its pension?
Yeah, I mean, it really varies. And so, I mean, I guess, you know, there are a number of reports that have been done. I mean, I know there's the Citizens Grand Jury that's come out that estimates that the cost about $413 million in this fiscal year for pension and health care costs, which obviously is a pretty strong number. But they're looking at 5 years from now it being $1 billion obligation. Mm-hmm. So I think what people are talking about is an immediate conversation, both at the state and the local level, but one that is likely just going to get a lot worse.
Mm-hmm. And what I've heard from proponents of pension reform is a refrain that says, you know, this is just about the math. There's just some numbers out there. This is a hard reality, and this just needs to be taken care of. Unless we start to look at public employee compensation, we're not going to be able to bridge these gaps. And my sense is that there is an aspect of this that is truly just about the numbers and the math. But I wouldn't be asking a politics professor this question if you weren't a politics professor. What else is here going on?
Well,
here?
I mean, the math is part of it, but as with all budgetary math problems, it's a lot deeper than the math. I mean, so I think. You know, I spent the last couple of days poring over actuarial tables, which I don't pretend to understand, trying to see if I could understand the math that it's all about. And there's a lot more going on, as I said. I mean, it's part of this national movement that have really targeted public employees. Time of economic downturn, it's pretty easy to point at public employees and to demonize public employees as being part of the problem. And so I think, without taking sides in the pension debate that's playing out in San Francisco, certainly nationally what's happening is you have this, profound economic insecurity. And in the wake of that, these questions about, you know, why is it that public employees have such better benefits than private private sector employees? And rather in past years, you might have that conversation about how do we raise the standard of living of private sector employees in
so
this context.
Use the public sector as setting an example.
Right. In this context, it's, you know, they've been demonized as part of the problem. And frankly, even in San Francisco or in other jurisdictions, the most people agree that there is some need to reform pensions. But I think also most people agree that the current budget situation is not at all being caused by retirement benefits. This isn't the cause of the downturn. It certainly isn't the cause of the budget deficits. But it becomes a pretty easy way of scapegoating public employee unions and saying, if we only got rid of these pension obligations, everything will go back to how it was.
So this is not the first economic crisis that this city or other cities have faced. Why the attention on public employee compensation this time around? Or has it been this way before? We just don't remember it.
That's a great question. I mean, we've had bad budgets in the past. I think there are a couple things. One is that some of this is real. I mean, a significant policy issue that's been going on for some time that people have been talking about. But as I said, part of it is this national mood, and it becomes fairly easy to target public employees as part of the problem.
Hmm. And so, what would you say is at stake here as this process moves forward?
In San Francisco or nationally? Nationally, I think the future of public employee unions is at stake. I mean, if you look at what was going on in Wisconsin and other state houses, I think what we're talking about is more significant than whether we can agree on, you know, a 6% increase in public employees' pay towards pensions or an 8% increase or what that difference will be. I think the gap in San Francisco between the different perspectives is a lot more narrow than it is in other places. I think if you're talking about what's at stake in the national debate, I mean, you've got governors effectively decertifying ratifying public employee unions. So I think there's an awful lot at stake about how people live and work and what the future of public employment looks like nationally. I think in San Francisco, I mean, not to minimize the significance of the debate, but we're talking about, you know, how much public employees are going to pay towards their retirement, how much they're going to pay towards their retiree health care. I think, I mean, there's
retirement,
a lot
of, age, other kinds of things.
Exactly. I mean, there's a lot that's being discussed as part of this this discussion that really matters to how to public employees. But I think, at least my sense is that locally the tenor and tone of the debate has been a lot more restrained and a lot more reasonable than has been nationally.
And given what's happened in places like Wisconsin, right, that have gone much farther afield than anyone is talking about here in San Francisco. Who's watching what's going on here in San Francisco, and what kind of model could what happens here set for the rest of the country? Or I mean, how does the San Francisco experience, how's it going to play out in other sections of
the
country?
I think it'll definitely play out in California. If you look at the other local jurisdictions, I mean, there's conversations about pension reform in just about every other charter city. And so, you know, whether it's San Diego or Oakland or other places, I mean, everybody's sort of looking at pension reform. And so, if the effort to, work effectively with unions to create a plan that actually has widespread agreement, if that's successful, I think that does become the alternative perspective to what's going on in places like Wisconsin, where public employee unions were cut out from the outset, and really the effort was to decertify public employees entirely. So the question is, can you actually create a coalition around around pension reform that can be an inclusive one? That to me is ultimately the challenge.
So Dave Lowe, I want to ask that question to you. You're the executive director and director of governmental relations for Californians for Retirement Security. Can this be done in a coalition type way, in a way that brings together city governments and employees and their representatives?
Absolutely. In fact, employees up and down the state of California have made major concessions in pensions over the last months and year. State employees have agreed to double their contribution towards pensions from 5% to 10%, saving the state billions of dollars. And in San Francisco, the unions have come together with the mayor to put together a pension proposal that will save the city money. So union members don't have their heads in the sand. We would agree with the previous speaker that we didn't cause this problem, but the fact that there's even the perception of a problem have brought us to the table, and we're reaching agreements all over the state to save our employers' money.
And going back to Corey's original comments around, or his initial comments around this issue of how public employees being looked at as perhaps to blame in this problem, and are being looked at or being scapegoated, perhaps in his words, how do you respond to that that imagery and that rhetoric that's being used, and what do you think are some of the biggest myths and misperceptions about public employee compensation?
Well, there's no doubt that there's a concerted movement across the United States to demonize public employees and to attack public employee unions using this pension debate. And it's unfortunate because prior to 2005, the pension systems were 100% funded. The benefits were precisely what they are today in most cases. And the downturn in the market caused a lot of this problem. In fact, prior to the downturn in the market, many of the employers, because they were so well funded, stopped paying into the pension systems while the employees continued to pay their contribution the entire time. Also, the pension cost as a percentage of payroll is generally less today than it was in 1980 for most employers. For example, for the state, I represent the California School Employees Association, the secretaries, custodians, workers in the schools, and the state was paying 13% for pensions in 1980, and they're paying 10% for the same for the pension benefits today. So the pension costs are cyclical. They move up and down based on the stock market, how much the employer pays in, and people have been using basically a comparison from the year 2000 to today because that was the peak of the market, and we're at the depth of the market now to create a completely skewed view. And the reality is that employees have been paying in the whole time, and the pension benefits are not astronomical. The average state employee in California gets about $2,000 a month in pensions. The average classified school employee receives less than $1,200 a month in pension benefits.
For the record, though, I believe that not all city and county of San Francisco employees actually currently pay into their own, contribute to their own pensions, if I'm not mistaken, although some of that is shifting with the turnover of the fiscal year. But to get back to something that you were talking about in terms of the public employees and their contribution or lack of contribution to this economic crisis. How about this other issue? There's mounting reports put out there, and you can argue whether what the merits of those reports are, that show that, you know, public employees are being compensated, at least in the retiree part of things, in their pensions and their health benefits are being compensated better than the private sector, and that this perception that the private sector has higher salaries compared to public employees, that gap is narrowed or has disappeared, and in fact, public employees are being better compensated than private employees all around. What do you say to that argument for reform of public employee compensation?
Well, the University of California Institute of Industrial Relations just recently did a study on that subject. And what they found is that when you take into consideration education, salaries, pensions, and other benefits, that employees in the public sector receive slightly less than their counterparts in the private sector. So, you know, some studies that, you know, have been used to try to point in the other direction. There's probably an equal number of studies on either side. Public employees do receive probably better benefits and generally lower salaries. And in the end, they come out relatively equal and just slightly less on the public employee side, according to the Berkeley study.
And so then, but back to this question of, as the private sector has defunded its pensions or no longer honoring its pension commitments, and things are moving away from the fringe benefits that were used in the past to lure workers, what do you say to the argument that it's time for this trend to sort of take hold within the public employee spectrum?
I would argue exactly the opposite, is that this is a very bad trend for all workers in California. We've seen several things happen over the last decade. The income disparity between the very top earners in America and everybody else has grown at dramatic rates. And the Wall Street Journal recently did a study to look at the private sector. And, you know, with the baby boomers now who have been transitioned into 401k plans, they found that the average American now has in their retirement savings enough to last about one quarter of their lifespan in retirement, that they will run out of money when they've reached 25% into retirement. So the 401k programs have proven to be dismally inadequate, and rather than a race to the bottom, we ought to be shoring up the private sector workers so that they're not retiring into poverty, and everybody deserves a fair retirement.
And I want to give you a crack at this question as well. Why now? Why is this happening now? There's been other financial crises of the past. Are we just not remembering that public employee compensation was looked at in the past as well? Or is this time different? And if so, why?
Well, I think it's a combination of factors. We are going through the worst economic recession since the Great Depression. So I think for most of us living today, nobody remembers the Great Depression. Most people that were living through the Great Depression are either very old or have passed away. And so this is unique. And during very, very bad times, it's easy to start pitting people against each other, which is what we've seen. The extremists on the right are attacking the public employees, are attacking workers, are trying to drive everybody to the bottom. And reality is that the only people that are making out like bandits right now are the same Wall Street bankers and brokers who got us into this mess with the house of cards they built on the mortgage crisis. And now they're walking away with huge bonuses. So I think it's a diversionary attack in some respects. And in other respects, it is a concentrated effort to silence the voice of public employee unions, who currently are one of the few organized voices in America right now that are fighting for income equality.
And we just heard there from Dave Lowe, the executive director and the director of governmental relations of Californians for Retirement Security, the largest classified school employee union in the country. And just a little bit before that was Corey Cook, assistant professor of University of San Francisco and the director of the Leo T. McCarthy Center for Public Service and the Common Good, here on City Visions on 91.7 KALW San Francisco and on the web at KALW.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're discussing public employee pension reform, and we're about to hear in just a moment from Larry Bradshaw from the Service Employees International Union, and in about 10 minutes or so, we're expecting to be joined by Jeff Adachi, the San Francisco public defender and the proponent of so-called Son of B measure that is collecting signatures to qualify for the November ballot that is looking to raise the amount of that public employees contribute to their pensions, among other measures, to help close the gap in the current crisis in pension funding here in the city of San Francisco. We are going to open our phones now to you, our listeners, 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134 if you want to join our conversation. Are you a city employee? What do you think about measures that are looking to have you increase your contribution to your retirement? 415-841-4134. Are you a taxpayer and a private sector worker? What do you think about the differences between how the private sector has handled employee compensation and how the public sector is doing so? 415-841-4134, or email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. So Larry Bradshaw, to bring you into the conversation, you work with the Service Employees International Union Local 1021, which represents 54,000 members in Northern California, and you also work as a paramedic. What's your sense of the conversation so far that you've heard tonight?
I think the starting point has to be that the problem is not an over-generous public sector pension. Just like Dave talked about the state workers, in San Francisco, the average pension is $30,000 per year. If you take out the high-paid managers, the technical and the professional workers, the workers that I represent, the people that I think make San Francisco a great place to live and to work and to play, make maybe mid-20s or low-20s is the average public sector pension. So over-generous public pensions didn't cause the problem. The problem, as Corey laid out, had to do with the 2008 stock market crash, where we lost nearly $4 billion worth of investment funds. So that's what we're trying to pay off. This problem has not been caused by employee spiking or...
What do you mean by that, spiking?
Spiking is where you increase your salary in your final year or last year, where you're given a promotion or a raise, and it sort of bumps you up so that when you retire, you're going out at a higher salary than, say, the 20 years you had worked previously. That's often been how public sector workers have been demonized, that we're gaming the system, that we're greedy, and that the public sector pensions are unsustainable. But really, it's pretty hard to survive on a public sector pension. And I think what the economic crisis in 2008 has done is showed us the inadequacy of retirement security for all Americans. And I think with public sector workers is we're sort of the last group of workers that have a halfway decent pension plan. So we're sort of the last people standing, which makes us very noticeable.
And what about this idea that the proposals, and we haven't gotten to the actual proposals yet in any detail, but that the proposals that are likely to be in front of voters this November here in San Francisco are going to account for those at the lower end of the pay scale and not have them contribute as much as people on the higher end of the pay scale towards their retirement? What do you see? Do you see that as a concession that takes into account some of your concerns around how pension reform may, in a way, hurt those employees that you care so much about?
I believe that it should be graduated. It should be income-based. And what we've been working with the mayor and the other unions is to take that into account. But I also worry that a lot of the proposals on the table, say Jeff Adachi's proposal or what's been proposed in other municipalities around the state, is a severe reduction in pension and retirement benefits for future employees. Jeff Adachi's proposal will cut the benefits of retirement by about 25 to a third. And we believe that's bad public policy, that you'll have workers sitting side by side doing the exact same job, and one would be making 25% or 33% less benefits than the other worker, that creates divisions, animosity, and ill will. And we think that's bad public policy.
Mm. And if I'm not mistaken, Local 1021 represents about half of city workers here in San Francisco. And what has been your experience thus far in working with the mayor as he's tried to bring union representatives to the table to craft his measure?
It's been difficult. It's sort of like the cliche of herding cats. You know, we have 33 different unions at the table. Everyone brings to the table their own unique problems and interests of their membership. So we've had to sort of negotiate among ourselves as well as negotiate with the city to try to come up with a package that is sustainable and acceptable to all the parties. So it's been long, it's been arduous, but we've made great progress, I think.
And where is Local 1021 in terms of their support of the mayor's proposal?
We have an issue that affects our lowest paid workers that we're still trying to resolve with the mayor. And we're hopeful that that will be resolved by next week.
And are you the only union that has not, or the only union reps that have not signed on so far to the mayor's plan?
There are a couple smaller unions that have not sat down the table yet, but we are the largest union that has not technically signed on to the package.
And without getting into too much technicalities, because sometimes pension talk can really make people's eyes cross, tell us a little bit about the issue that you're concerned about and why you're holding out.
In 2008, when the stock market crashed and the city faced the first sort of major deficit problem, one of the cost-saving measures they did was to lay off a lot of our lowest paid workers, mostly women and people of color that were the lowest pay scale, and then rehire them at pay cuts of up to 20%. And so we've been fighting to undo that damage for the last 3 or 4 years. And one of the ways we've done that is we've asked every SEIU member in the city and county to contribute 1% of their salary to make these workers whole so that people wouldn't take a 20% pay cut, essentially lose everything. So we're paying additionally on top of what every other worker is making, of what every other worker is paying. Currently, city workers are giving back $125 million this year. We gave back $125 million in other concessions. So that's $250 million. And then we're paying just 1% on top of that to make whole these workers. So we have to sort of fix that problem to come up to the contribution levels the mayor wants us to on the pension plan.
And we're hoping to be joined by Jeff Adachi in just a few moments. So I'm going to let him sort of discuss his own plan. But you know, when you look at the two plans put side by side, that being proposed by Mayor Ed Lee and Jeff Adachi, there are some differences. But in general, there's lots of commonalities, meaning that everyone's going to have to be contributing to their pension. There's going to be increase in the amount of contributions, and different plans have the two plans that differ amount the additional amount that everyone will have to pay, and that is graduated based on salary level. There's also provisions in both measures that are trying to decrease the chances of this so-called spiking, which is when public employees have increased pension because their pension salary is based on their last year of employment, and trying to spread that out by making the average of the last several years rather than just the last year, increasing the retirement age, looking at pension caps, and the question of whether retirees should contribute to their health care costs. So I'm curious, you know, the two side by side, sort of similar in their scope, different in the details in terms of the numbers. And I'm curious what your concerns are about the Jeff Adachi plan.
Well, one, the Jeff Adachi plan is being imposed at the ballot box on workers and pensioners. And we believe the best way to come up with a pension reform that has the buy-in of everyone and really takes into account the needs of the different parties and constituencies is if we sit down and negotiate that. The other element with Mr. Adachi's plan is it goes too far. It it penalizes the workers for what happened with the stock market crash of 2008. Corey's right. It is a numbers problem, But essentially what we're trying to fix in San Francisco is we lost about $3.5 to $4 billion. That has to be repaid over 5 years. That's why we're struggling. That's why we have budget deficits. One simple solution is instead of paying it off over 5 years, we could stretch out over 10 years. Budget deficits decreased by half.
That's so-called smoothing. Is that right?
Right.
Okay. Where you basically get more time to pay back or pay back into the system to make it solvent again.
It's actually a little more technical than that. That smoothing just is how you recognize the losses. The losses still have to be paid off over 15 years, according to the retirement system. So it doesn't kick the can down the road. It doesn't delay paying it off. It just makes you pay off 10% every year instead of 20% of the losses. And meanwhile, the stock market is doing very well. It gives the economy a chance to recover, put more money back into the pension plan. So that's one very simple solution. The other thing that we don't like about Mr. Adachi's plan is that it really lowers the retirement benefits for future employees. And again, for the majority of city workers, it's pretty marginal already. And to talk about reducing that by a quarter, we feel is just too much.
So you feel like it targets those that at the lower end of the pay scale?
Yeah, and I guess for us, we see it more of a revenue problem than a deficit problem, right? If we return to the tax rates that were in effect when Ronald Reagan was president, the federal budget deficit goes away. If we were to tax the top 1% in California at 10%, the state budget deficit goes away. So really what we're dealing with, deficits that are created by the tax cuts that have gone to the wealthiest individuals, they've accumulated, that have doubled their wealth over the last 12 years. So we don't feel that's asking too much. But we're struggling to provide services, to provide pension, health care, and do all the things you have to do to run a city with decreased revenue. And that's really at bottom what the problem is all about.
And I want to reintroduce the program. This is City Visions on 91.7 KLW San Francisco and on the web at KALW.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're discussing public employee pension reform with our guests Larry Bradshaw, paramedic and vice president of the Service Employees International Union, SEIU, Local 1021, Corey Cook, assistant professor at the University of San Francisco and the director of the Leo T. McCarthy Center for Public Service and the Common Good, and by phone, Dave Lowe, the executive director and director of governmental relations of Californians for Retirement Security, the largest classified school employee union in the country. And we are now being joined by Jeff Adachi, San Francisco's public defender and proponent of the so-called Son of B measure that is currently collecting signatures to qualify for the November ballot. And before I welcome you to give comments, Jeff, I'm going to put out the phone number for listeners to join our conversation. That's 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134, or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. So, Mr. Adachi, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
Great. So I'm not sure how much of our conversation you've had a chance to listen to so far, but I wanted to allow you to make some introductory comments about your proposals and how you got to making those proposals and why you believe your proposals are the necessary ones to move forward.
Well, I've been a public employee, a city employee for 22 years. I've been a public defender. I went to law school because I wanted to be a public servant. I wanted to be a lawyer for the people. And what I've seen year after year, unfortunately, is that we've seen basic services being cut. You know, we've seen a lot of the programs that we as progressives have worked very hard in San Francisco to maintain. And every year I would see the pension costs and the healthcare costs go up the roof. Now, as some of your panelists have said, I mean, it's not the fault of public employees, but the reality is that we only have a limited amount of dollars to allocate every year. In San Francisco, our pension costs are going to increase from $357 million this year is what we're paying to $829 million in the next four years. That's an average of $100 million a year. So the question, and this comes at a time where we're facing, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in deficits. So the question is, you know, how do we sustain these systems and at the same time ensure that we're able to provide basic services to the residents that we serve? And so that's how I came up with the San Francisco Pension Reform Act. And I know that people have said, well, you know, it's not fair because it wasn't a negotiated solution. But it's a solution that will solve the problem. It's a solution that will require a balanced cost sharing of pension costs between city workers. Hey, I'm a city employee. I don't want to pay more for my pensions, but we have to. We have to do something to ensure that we're able to protect the basic services that we as city employees are in the business of doing.
And to get into some more of the details, what do you see as the biggest differences between your proposal and the proposal that the mayor is working on?
Well, one of the things that we were criticized for in the last campaign is that that employees who made $50,000 would have pay the same contribution as employees who earned $100,000. That's exactly what the mayor's proposal does. Our proposal exempts employees who earn less than $50,000 from any increase. It's expensive to live in the Bay Area, and then has a graduated contribution increase and requires the employees who make the most to pay the most. The biggest difference, though, is that our plan would save about double of what the so-called consensus plan would save. Now, why is that important? Because every year we're seeing more and more basic services being cut. You know, last year we canceled summer school for the second year in San Francisco for the first time in our city's history. Why? Because it cost $2 million to have summer school every year. Well, we spent over 200 times that on employee pensions alone. So we have to find a solution if we're going to be able to sustain these systems and at the same time provide the services that people need.
And just before you joined our conversation, I had Larry Bradshaw from SEIU outline some of his concerns, and I'll let him represent his own concerns. But just a couple of points that I want to make sure you get to address is so the collective bargaining thing was really important, and you kind of addressed it a little bit but moved on from that. I want to hear a little bit more about why you think it was okay to move forward without attempting to speak to the unions, perhaps yourself. The second point is that he thinks that your proposals go too far in terms of the amounts that people are going to be contributing. And that despite the fact that there's the graduated rates, that in fact this still does target low-wage workers unfairly. So is that a good characterization, Larry, of your concerns?
Yes.
Okay. So, Jeff, go ahead. Would you want to respond to those in turn?
Let me say, first of all, that I agree with Larry that, you know, employees who earn less should pay less. And, in fact, our proposal is the only proposal that recognizes that lower-paid employees should pay less. I mean, somebody who's making $50,000 in San Francisco should be paying less in terms of a percentage of earnings than somebody who's making $100,000 a year. And that's our proposal that makes that distinction. I think it's also important, you know, that we, you know, have a system that's fair. Do you know that currently police officers and firefighters, safety employees, who get much better pensions than non-safety employees, they actually withdraw 36% of the funds that are in the pension fund, and they put 17% in. And so our proposal is the only proposal that requires safety employees to pay 2.5% more. Why? Because that's fair. It's only fair that if you're able to draw more out of the system, that you would contribute a little bit more. So this is about fairness, and it's also about making sure that these systems are sustainable. Because if we don't act now to make sure that these systems are going to be here 20 years or 30 years down the line, it's not going to be there for the next generation of workers.
So, Larry, I'm going to let you ask some follow-up questions there, and go ahead.
Well, Jeff, I look forward to when we get to work on the same ballot measure. I agree with you that the poor have paid with service cuts in the city and county of San Francisco, and the people that work for the city and county have paid for it with job losses, with pay cuts, with furlough days. When are we going to make the people that have the wealth pay their fair share to live and to work and to play in San Francisco?
And that's exactly the question that should be asked.
Right. Because so there's been a steady growth in income and in wealth in this country for the last 30 years. Mm-hmm. It's went to the top 1%.
Right.
So if you would join hands with the unions and we were to put some ballot measures on that wouldn't penalize the wealthy, but would just make them pay their fair share in the same way that working people and the poor have paid their fair share, if they were to step up to the plate. And that's my problem with you, Jeff, is that you're buying into this whole demonization of us as being the problem and saying that working people have to pay more for this crisis that you admit we didn't create, that was created by stock market, by Wall Street greed and speculation. Why don't we join together and make the people that really are responsible for this mess help us pay for the mess and get out of this?
And on that point, I couldn't agree with you more, that we have to do something about, you know, the way in which, you know, we allocate, you know, things like, I mean, if you look at, for example, the way in which our pension system operates, okay, is it fair, you know, to a worker, you know, who, you know, works all his life, you know, for the city and county and doesn't get their due? Well, that's what's going to happen, because where are we going to get the money from? Are we going to get a check from Lehman Brothers? Is there going to be a lawsuit that's going to be brought that's going to pay for these costs? That's what concerns me. Now, if you're talking about tax measures, I think that the governor, Governor Brown, missed an opportunity, because why weren't the tax measures on the ballot? Because people wanted to see accountability and fiscal reform. So we've got to put those things together, right? Mayor Ed Lee is talking about putting a sales tax, a 0.5% sales tax on the ballot in November. That will raise $60 million a year. But we're going to spend 12 times that on retiree pensions alone. Now, I'm not saying that we have to pit, you know, one against the other, but we have to find a way to balance this, because we don't have a limited well of money that we can go to pay for these costs. It's limited. And if we, you know, are committed to paying the pension costs, and if that's what, you know, our priority is, then we're going to see job losses. We're going to see cuts in services. We're going to see the kind of, you know, of tax measures that aren't equitable, that affect the poorest in our society.
And Dave Lowe, I wanted to let you in on the conversation here again. Any thoughts or questions you have?
Well, I think that you can't really separate these issues. The fact is we have a budget deficit, and the budget deficit is caused predominantly by the downturn in the economy. So to focus only on pensions and play pensions off against cuts for other services is really an unfair comparison. The reality is the biggest cuts are being caused not by the growth in pensions, but the shrinking of budgets. So, I think Mr. Adachi really kind of skirted the question of revenues and making the super wealthy pay their fair share. I mean, they've received decreases in taxes from the federal government. They're paying less. The top income earners are paying less now than they did when Pete Wilson was governor. So I think that we ought to have the discussion about the whole subject. And I think Mr. Adachi skirted the question. And rather than going off on your own and politically grandstanding a proposal, I think he should go to the table and reach agreement like the mayor has with the labor unions in San Francisco.
Mr. Dutch, I'm going to let you answer that really briefly, because I want to get Corey Cook back in the conversation. Go ahead.
Let me tell you, Dave, you know, this is not about grandstanding. I mean, do you think me, as a public defender, you know, am going to take this kind of political risk, you know, just to grandstand and, you know, to try and be, you know, be somebody? I mean, this is really about, you know, if you care about public services, which I know you do, Karen, I remember the last panel we were on, you told us the heart-wrenching stories of your members, who many of them were, you know, just making it from paycheck to paycheck. And that completely raised my awareness, you know. And so I think that unless we find a way that we're going to be able to sustain government, okay, because, again, it's not a blank check. We can't just go back and say, okay, it's Wall Street's fault. You write a $10 billion check, you know, to make up for the pension losses, you know. We can't do that. We don't have that. We don't have that option right now. So what's the alternative? The alternative is either to cut jobs, to cut services. And I agree, if there are other alternatives out there, I will be behind you 100%. But until we find that way to get out of this, we have to, you know, be able to figure out, as city employees, am I willing to contribute towards my pension to see that it's sustainable? Absolutely. Am I willing to make some adjustments to ensure that we're able to continue to provide services to poor people? Absolutely.
And Corey, to this issue of, you know, not trying to pit public employees versus public services, what of this idea that really this debate should be about going after other revenue sources and redistributing the wealth, so to speak, given all the logjam we have in Sacramento and the hurdles that it takes to pass new revenue measures? Is that feasible?
Probably not. But let me back up. So I mean, it largely is a revenue problem. If you look at the state of California right now, we have this year about $26 billion billion-dollar budget deficit, projected the next 5 years, $20 billion annually every year. If you look at the Legislative Analyst Office projections of what our budget would be for this year, for this coming fiscal year, it's $41 billion less in revenue of what we're actually collecting than the LAO anticipated. So this is largely caused by a massive decrease in revenue. But also our budget problems are caused by, you know, the state's paying somewhere between $6 and $7 billion on pensions. We're paying roughly that in interest on debt, on bonds, on the transportation bonds. A lot of the promises we made historically are coming due at the same time that we're facing this massive revenue problem. And so while I think it's correct that revenue has to be part of the solution, certainly at the state level, it has to be part of the solution. Right now, it's not. I mean, the governor can't get the legislature to agree to put this on the ballot, let alone voters to vote for it. And in that context, we've already done $13 billion in cuts that are painful, that are the CSUs and the UCs. And what we're looking at in the future, unless this goes on the ballot, is $9 billion more in cuts. And that doesn't solve next year's problems. That's for this year. We're still $20 billion out of whack moving forward. So I guess the answer being, I think it's clear that we have to look at the revenue side. I think most people who look at this in a balanced way say you have to solve the revenue problem. But at the same time, though, you are at this point, fair or not, and I frankly personally believe it's unfair, but fair or not, you are now dealing with questions of should we be funding the CSU? Should we be ensuring that California actually has equitable access to higher education? Or do we fund pensions? I mean, it's come to the point where the budget gimmicks and the nonsense and the games and the 11-month fiscal years and all the stuff that we did in the past decade or so have come due, and the problems are to the point where there simply are no gimmicks that are going to solve this. And so I think, you know, in that context, it becomes very easy to point at, you know, the city of Bell or the city of Vernon or other places where you can point to clear examples of pension spiking and exorbitant benefits paid to the highest paid public employees, and it's very difficult to beat those stories back, given the context of what's going on statewide and the magnitude of the cuts that we're talking about that are very serious.
Go ahead.
If there's one thing I could add, I mean, in San Francisco, for the first time in our history, as I mentioned, we canceled summer school for 2 years in a row. The cost of that was $2 million. We spent 200 times that on pensions alone this year. So, again, we do have to make those choices. And, hey, I wish I didn't have to make those choices. I wish I didn't have to contribute towards my pension. But that's insane, and we have to do something, you know, to ensure that our kids, the next generation, aren't saddled, you know, with a debt that's unsustainable.
Edlow, your response is to this notion that, you know, yes, revenue generation is going to have to be part of the solution, but that's not coming anytime soon.
Yes, you know, what a reasonable amount to contribute, I think, is a question. The employees in San Francisco, I'm sure, that aren't paying towards their pension, it's because they gave up raises in previous years to have the employer pick up the cost. So had they put it in the salary, they would have been paying into their pensions. It would have been the same cost as it is now. When you're comparing cuts in programs, you know, the reality is as Corey stated, at the state level, the entire cost of pensions for the state of California is about $7 billion out of, which amounts to less than 5% of the total state budget. If you just eliminated pensions completely, you wouldn't cut into the state budget deficit by even half. And of course, you can't eliminate pensions completely. You can't even impair current pensions. So, the fact is that you can't balance the budget by on the pension side alone. The biggest part of the problem is a revenue problem, not on the cost of pensions. And people are just you could focus on any piece of the budget and say, well, you know, because we're paying for this piece, whether it's education or prisons, we're not putting money someplace else. So I think that it's an unfair comparison to just single out pensions when the fact is that they're a small portion of every budget and are not substantially greater than they have been on the average for the last 30 years.
Yeah, but one thing that's important, you know, to note is the unfunded liability. I mean, California has a $500 billion with an unfunded liability. These are debts based on promises that were made to retirees and to employees that can't be met. In San Francisco, we have a $4.3 billion unfunded liability for health care costs that we've promised to city employees that we can't pay for. So that's the scary thing, and that's the thing that's looming in our future.
Larry, go ahead.
Yeah, when you throw out numbers like the $4.3 billion unfunded liability, that number is not completely true. And one of the things about
the controller, Larry, saying this.
Right. But what's included in there is health care costs for retirees.
Right.
And once you retire and qualify for Medicare, then that gets taken out. But you're required when you're reporting the unfunded liability to put that number in, even though you're never going to pay for it. It's the kind of facts and figures you throw out, Jeff, to create this scare thing, just like you did a few minutes ago when you said, what do I tell a San Francisco public employee when the pension fund goes broke and they can't get paid? No one is predicting that San Francisco will not be able to meet its obligations. We were rated the second most secure retirement system in the country. We're going to dip down to about 80% funded, and then we're going to shoot back up to where we've always been, around 100%. We had 7 years where the city government took a pension holiday, did not contribute to our pensions at all because the fund was overfunded, over 100% funded, both market and actuarially valued. I want to respond to this one thing that keeps being thrown out about San Francisco workers not paying into the retirement. I was at the bargaining table when that was negotiated. That was Willie Brown. And we were negotiating a pay increase back in the, you know, the booming 90s. And Willie Brown said, instead of taking a pay increase, how about I pay your share of the retirement? Because it's cheaper for the city that way. When you pay me a dollar and a wage increase, you got to pay $1.30 for all the roll-up cost of the state taxes, the federal taxes, the SDI, the workers' comp, all that stuff. But if you pay my retirement, it's a straight dollar. So Willie Brown cut that deal because it was cheaper to do that than to give us a pay increase. And now, ever since then, we've been demonized because we took a deal that was better for the city 20 years ago when it was a whole different economic environment.
And Larry, you're absolutely right. If Willie Brown came to me with the same offer, I would take it, of course. The question is, what do we do now? I mean, the reality of the situation that we're in is that our pension costs are going up $100 million a year. I know you disagree with the $4.3 billion in unfunded health care costs, but that's something that's coming from the controller, all right? And the question that I have is, how do we sustain the pension system and at the same time ensure that we're not cutting jobs, that we're not, creating a situation where, we all became public servants because we want to serve the public. That's at the core of all, whether you're a nurse, whether you're a firefighter, whether you're a police officer, whether you're a public defender. And that's what's being threatened here, is our ability to deliver basic services to people.
I want to read an email to you that's directed at you, Jeff, from Denise. She says, why are the attacks on workers rather than on corporations, the war and the excessive salaries of corporate heads and even top-heavy city managers? How about a cap on salaries of no more than $200,000 a year, the same of Mr. Adachi's?
And the answer is that if we could do that, if that could happen, if there was a way, you know, that you could across the board equalize everybody's pension, salary, et cetera, yeah, that would be a solution. But that's not reality. The reality is that we only have a certain number of dollars in, for example, our city budget, okay? And so if we choose to pay, and we have to pay, $829 million in pension costs in 4 years, that's going to mean about $400 million worth of cuts in services and jobs. And unless there's some, magical transformation of how wealth is distributed in this country, and I totally get that. I totally get that, you know, Denise is saying that's what should happen. But unless that happens, we're going to wind up like Vallejo, and we can't let that happen.
Okay, so we have 5 minutes left in our program, a little bit less, actually. So I'm just going to go through each of our guests and have them answer a question. So, Larry, you've talked about what you think would help you to come into line with Mayor Lee's proposal. What would you like to see moving forward, as this issue probably will not completely be resolved? Public employee compensation may keep coming up. What would you like to see as principles moving forward to get you at the table in a way that's continues to be collaborative?
What I would like to see come out of this is a broader debate about retirement security for all Americans. We have a situation where more than half of Americans are going to rely upon Social Security for more than half their income when they retire, and Social Security pays about what a minimum wage worker earns. No one in this country really has secure retirement. I'd like us to use this crisis we had in 2008, which really exposed the limits of the 401ks, of public sector pensions, of sort of all the problems with retirement, and start saying, how do we reward working people who give 20, 30, 40, 50 years of their life to a private employer or a public employer? Shouldn't there be some security of a retirement that people can look forward to and know that for the final years of their life that they don't have to struggle, they don't have to sort of scrimp and save? Surely in the country that has more wealth than any nation in the history of this world, we can find a way to do that.
And to Dave Lowe, as the public is going to be considering these ballot measures once they actually do get on the ballot, what kinds of messages do you want to make sure they have? What kind of information do you think they need to be able to really look at the merits of these measures?
I think that the public needs to know precisely what the impact is on all the workers. I think that what gets lost in this discussion oftentimes is people focus on the most extreme examples, the person that gets the $100,000 pension, or, you know, these large figures people throw out on unfunded liabilities. But the reality is we're talking about people here. And, you know, if a low-wage worker, like a school custodian, is making $900 a month in a pension, and you're going to cut it by 20% or 30%, you're driving somebody who's already close to the poverty line far below it. And so I think that they need to get all the facts on these ballot measures. They need to understand the impact up and down the ladder and not be provoked by some of the extreme examples that people have a tendency to throw out and the worst-case scenarios and the fact
okay, I need to move on.
That 80% of the people receive modest pensions.
Okay. And Jeff Adachi, is there any situation where you would decide to pull your measure?
Absolutely. I agree with Larry. We need to have a broad discussion, but we also have to deal with the inequities. Dave, we had a police officer last year.
So what are the conditions where you would pull your measure?
If we realize the cost savings. But we had a police officer who made $516,000 in a year with a $250,000 a year pension.
Hold on. Larry, are you willing to sit down with Jeff?
Oh, absolutely. We need to sit down and solve this problem because...
Jeff, if you're willing to have a real conversation and not just sound bites back and forth about doom and gloom and how the system's going to fall apart, I would sit down with you and have a conversation.
So that's an invitation.
We got a date.
Okay. Right. Okay. Corey, you're going to take us out. How is this debate going to shape the November mayoral election in this city?
I think it depends very much on, what the Board of Supervisors does, if there are amendments that are made to what's currently being considered. And it depends, too, on what Mr. Adachi does. I think right now, if there's a single measure that's the quote-unquote consensus measure on the ballot, and it's the one that Mayor Lee has negotiated with the unions, I don't see any way that any of the major mayoral candidates would do anything other than endorse that measure and stay as far away from the pension issue as they possibly can.
And
however, there's an alternative measure on the ballot, then it becomes interesting.
And we're going to have to leave it there. Probably we'll have more shows on this topic as November gets closer. And that's City Visions for this evening. Our guests tonight were Larry Bradshaw of SEIU, Corey Cook of the University of San Francisco, Dave Lowe of the Californians for Retirement Security, and Jeff Adachi, San Francisco's public defender. Thanks all for joining me this evening.
Thanks, Ravenous.
Thank you.
For a link to this and other City Vision shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, check out our website at cityvisionsradio.com. Erin Dier this evening was Eric Jansen. Tonight's show was produced by Lisa Denenmark. City Vision's senior producer is Judith Sansone, and Neil Fries manages our website. Join my co-host Lauren Meltzer next Monday when we'll talk about San Francisco's community boards. This is Joseph Pache. Thanks for listening. Good night and have a great week.